Good morning, Nexus friends. Welcome to another Sunday Morning Online and the end of an era here for us together. This is our final Sunday of the season. We're moving into summer mode at Nexus. And of course, you can find all about that online if you want to join up with us on any of our summer adventures, summer Sundays, lots of fun things going on there. But for us online, this is the last time at the end of the season here that I'll be doing a video sermon podcast. In the fall, the plan is to return to simply audio podcast format, which means this is after 2 years and 3 months, 4 months, something like this. the last time we'll be together like this, and what a journey it has been. What a 2.5 years it has been. I want to thank you for those of you who are still following along with us and have been here since March of 2020. Wow, it has been quite the adventure. And thank you. I don't thank our online audience enough for tuning in, for supporting us. We appreciate you and following along, and it means a lot to me to know that others outside of the in-person Nexus audience are interested in some of the things I have to say about faith and Christianity. So thank you for this journey of the last 2.5 years. I appreciate it. For our final Sunday together, I want to bring you a sermon called A Beautiful Thing. And to do that, I want to tell you the story of Jesus being anointed by a woman. And the interesting thing about this story is that it is in all of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which is a very rare thing that a story that happened to Jesus is in all 4 of the Gospels. And there are some variations to the story. And so what I've done is I've sort of mashed them up. Luke is the most different of the accounts. The other 3 kind of harmonize well, and so I've mashed them up. This is how the story goes. It goes this way. Now, the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away, and Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor in the home of Simon the leper. Then Mary took out about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. And some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, "Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages, and the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. "Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. And truly I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." And so imagine this, if you will. It's Wednesday evening of Holy Week. Jesus has come to Jerusalem, of course, to join his fellow Hebrew people in celebrating the national holiday of the Passover. And so on the eve of this Passover holiday, Jesus and his disciples, they're invited to a dinner being hosted in Jesus' honor. And Simon, who we know is a leper, we presume a leper that had been healed by Jesus, he's the host of this dinner in Bethany. And Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, they live in Bethany as well, so they live close by. They've been invited to the party as well. And so there could be more, but we know that there are at least 17 people at this dinner. There's the 12 disciples, Jesus, Mary, Martha, Lazarus, and at least Simon the leper. Again, there could be more. And so on that Wednesday evening, the sun begins to set. If you can imagine it, Jesus has been in Jerusalem since Sunday, and the sun's beginning to set, and Jesus and his disciples, they start making their way to Bethany, which is a 3-kilometer, about a 45-minute hike from Jerusalem. And you can imagine them arriving, right? Jesus and his crew warmly greeted by his good friends as wine is opened and served, the meal is being prepared. And then after, you know, some casual talk together, just as it's getting dark, we can imagine the meal being served, the friends begin to eat together. And this group of people was a special one, because every one of these people in this room, their lives had been dramatically affected, impacted by Jesus in some way. I mean, the disciples alone, they've been living and traveling with Jesus for 3 years. Simon had been healed by Jesus. Lazarus, of course, he'd been raised from the dead. And the two sisters had, of course, received their brother back. And so all of the people in this room have a rich history with Jesus. They're close, very close. And being all friends now, you can presume a certain, I suppose, a casual familiarity had developed among this crew. And at this meal, I can imagine the friends laughing, eating, sharing stories together. And of course, Jesus knows, though it seems lost on everyone else, Jesus knows very well that he has essentially but days, hours left to live. And for the others in the midst of this gathering, that no matter how much Jesus seemed to speak about, it seems to be constantly lost on them. But in this case, it's lost on everyone, it would seem, except for Mary. And you know, Mary seemed to have a very special relationship with Jesus. There was this unique kinship between the two of them. This was the Mary who, years before, had sat listening at Jesus' feet to him teach, a thing that was at the time only allowed for males to do something like that. And Jesus blesses that. He welcomes her as a disciple. This was the Mary who, in her grief over losing her brother Lazarus, in her grief, in her tears, it prompts Jesus to start crying and weeping himself. It's her tears and grief that prompt Jesus to raise Lazarus from the dead. This is the Mary who, in a few days' time, when everyone else had deserted Jesus, this would be the Mary who stood by his side underneath the cross. And this would be the Mary who, possibly this is the Mary who Jesus first revealed himself to when he was resurrected. There's a special relationship here. And unlike everyone else at the table, Mary, she seems to have an intuition about her. Even if she isn't quite certain or sure that Jesus' time is short, she seems to understand, you know what, this is the moment right here. Now is the time to do something special for Jesus. And maybe she knew what was coming and others didn't, that Jesus had only hours left, and she feels compelled to do something extravagant for him, something that would seem irrational, something that would seem way over the top. And so if you can imagine it, during the meal, everyone's laughing, sharing stories, eating, having a good time, and Mary excuses herself from the table. She runs back to her own house, just, you know, a few streets over in town. She retrieves one of her most valuable possessions, an alabaster flask containing a pound of pure oil spikenard. Now, spikenard's interesting. It's a root that grows only in the Himalayan mountains. So remember, at the time, that's a long way away. It only grows in the Himalayan mountains of Nepal, and it was very expensive. In fact, this bottle of fragrant oil would have cost her around the equivalent of $15,000. At the time, the disciples claim it's worth a year's wages, $15,000. Now, this is interesting because I actually ordered some spikenard oil this week. My plan is live at Nexus. I want to pass it around so everybody can take a dab, but I ordered this 5 milliliter bottle of spikenard oil from one of these essential oil companies. 5 milliliters, it's like this big, cost me $100. So think about that. If you do the math, there's 515 milliliters of pure oil in a pound, so I'm told. So you do the math, that works out today. To buy that much spikenard, it would have cost me $10,000. How much more would have been in that time when you couldn't exactly access the Himalayan mountains? I mean, this is expensive stuff, even still today. And so the disciples see this act happening and they're aghast, they're shocked. I mean, a lot of good things could be done with a year's wages. A lot of good things could be done with 15 grand. I mean, just imagine how far that could go in first century Palestine, supporting Jesus and his mission and his travels. Or just imagine how many charitable causes they could support with that money. But Mary, she has another idea of how to spend this, how to waste this, you could say. And she hurries back to Simon's house with this bottle of oil and she breaks, not opens, that's interesting to me. She breaks this alabaster flask and pours the entire contents of it on Jesus' head. I mean, if you wanted Jesus to have a little cologne or nice odor about him that night, a few drops would have done, but she pours the whole pound of it on Jesus' head. And in John's telling of the story, right, the fragrance fills the entire room. I mean, imagine that moment there. You're sitting there and this pound of oil, that's a lot on Jesus' head. I mean, he would have been soaked in this. And you watch as Jesus receives this, as this oil covers his skin, as it's just, you know, saturating his hair. And in that silent moment, right, it's kind of awkward. This is a bit bizarre, but someone breaks the silence. The criticism inevitably begins. We're told they rebuked Mary harshly. Imagine what that would have sounded like, right? Especially in a patriarchal culture. Like, what the hell, Mary? This is such a bloody waste. Why would you do something so excessive, so extravagant? Haven't you heard Jesus teaching about the poor? My goodness, Mary, don't you care about them? If you didn't want it, we could have sold it, funded our mission, funded the poor. I mean, Mary, that was worth $15,000. Why, Mary, are you at the table with the men anyway? That's why we don't want women at the table with us. It's irrational what you did, Mary. Don't you have any common sense? You need to become more practical. It is a sin, Mary, to waste. And in this harsh rebuke, you get the sense that Jesus' words, they come across a little stronger than they are on the page. You can imagine Jesus being like, shut up. Shut up. Everyone quiet. And leave her alone. Stop criticizing her. And you can picture at this moment another awkward silence hanging in the room as the aroma wafts in the air. And perhaps some around the table were a little surprised by Jesus' rebuke. They're a little confused, right? And in that moment, you can imagine all of the disciples, right, going, wow, okay, just one more thing we need to adjust our attitude on. We got to adjust ourselves here. Everyone, that is, I think, except for Judas. You see, for him, this was the moment. This seemed to be the last straw. In certain versions of the story, he's the one doing the complaining. And so this is the moment where he's done with Jesus. But you get the sense that the rest of them looked on going, okay, this is not what we were expecting, Jesus, but we're trying to understand. I mean, why would you allow waste like this, Jesus? What exactly are you getting at? What was the point? Well, I think the point are ones we still need to hear and remember and understand today. What Jesus goes on to say is this. Leave her alone, said Jesus. Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you. You can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. My goodness, to me, there's just a lot of urgency in this one paragraph from Jesus, and unpacking it seemed to me to be the perfect way to end our season at Nexus, to end our time together with video podcasts online. So I just want to draw out a few lines from Jesus and this story here and reflect on them. And the first thing to me is this, Jesus' line, she has done a beautiful thing to me. Because you see, acts of beauty are never a waste in God's economy. I mean, I like how Jesus frames this act from Mary, right? It's not that she did the right thing or the appropriate thing or the smart thing or the wise thing or the practical or prudent thing. She did a beautiful thing. And I like to think of this as a frame of reference in terms of how we live our lives. It's a bit of a twist, a bit of a different framework. I mean, for instance, in life, so often we ask ourselves, you know, hey, maybe we're going into a recession here. What is the financially wise thing for me to do in this situation? What would be the wise thing for me to do? How can I choose what's right here? How can I be practical with my time and energy and money? But Mary gives us an example here of another category worth considering in life. What beautiful thing could I do? What would be the beautiful thing for me to do in this situation? How can I choose in life that which is beautiful? How could I do beautiful things with my time and money and energy? It's a very different frame of reference than practical or right or wise. Choose the beautiful. Pursue the beautiful. And I think what Jesus sanctions for us here is an ethical imperative to pursue the beautiful, to live beautiful lives, to do beautiful things. And notice this, that even though Mary was accused of waste, we're told that the fragrance filled the room, right? And this is how I think about living a beautiful life, doing beautiful things. There's almost an aromatic quality to living a beautiful way. It has a smell, it has a fragrance, and you know, there's a lot of bad odors and smells in our world, but there's an essence, there's an aroma to living beautifully. I mean, think about it this way. You don't smell a flower or even a nice glass of wine and remark, you know what, that smells right to me, or that smells practical or wise to me. No, we smell it and say, oh, that's beautiful. Acts of beauty are never a waste in God's economy. Well, what does that look like for you and I? Well, I think it means a ton of different things. I'm a person of words, right? I love beautiful words. And traditionally in life, I think we save them for weddings and funerals, the occasional toast, which I think is a crying shame. And you know, it was interesting, for my 40th birthday a few years ago, my wife did just a spectacular thing. She knows me well. Had a number of different parties. And what she did is, all these little parties, friends, family, she asked everyone to do a toast in my honor. It was fascinating when it was my brother's turn. My brothers and parents were over and they were asked to do a toast. And it was fascinating to watch, because the nature of my relationship with my brothers is, you know, saying anything meaningful was difficult. It was awkward, you could say. And so most of the speeches were related to humor, funny stories, anecdotes, that sort of thing. And I found that interesting, that, you know, even my close brothers, that was a difficult thing for people to do. And, you know, it's made me, as I'm reflecting on this story, think about that. I mean, what is the biggest barrier to doing beautiful things for other people in life? And I'm convinced it's the awkwardness, the feeling of being vulnerable. I mean, imagine Mary here. I mean, surely she knows, like, this is going to disrupt dinner time. This is going to be incredibly awkward. Jesus is going to be soaked in oil. And further, she knows she might face ridicule. And so she knows what she's about to do is going to be awkward. And she goes ahead anyway. And I'm inclined to think that for many of us in life, the things that hold us back from doing something beautiful for others, for the people that we love, is that our heart of hearts, we think it might be received awkwardly. Or it might be received, you know, as a joke, or it just might not go over well. It might be awkward. We could get ridiculed. But the interesting thing to me is this about my 40th birthday is, Kristen also asked some friends of mine to do a toast in my honor on my birthday. And these friends, unlike my brothers, no, I love my brothers, laughing is what we do. But these friends of mine, they showed up and they took it seriously. And the interesting thing is, you know, I listened, and it's very awkward to listen to somebody say beautiful words about you. But I listened, I loved every second of it. But the interesting thing to me is this, is since that birthday, every single one of my friends on their milestone birthdays that were there, have asked that the same process happen at their birthdays. Because I think what happened in the moment is that they realized the true power and beauty of words, in that unfortunately, so often we save beautiful words for the ones we love for when they get married, and at their funeral when they've died, and in between there's this chasm. I think all of us, whether it's out of a false sense of humility or wanting to appear modest, we don't ever like to acknowledge that we want to be seen, acknowledged, appreciated with beautiful words. To admit that to some of us might even seem self-centered, but I find it interesting here that Jesus seems to relish this moment where he's the one being honored and anointed. And you know, as I've thought about it, I could be wrong. As far as I can tell, this is the only time I can think of in the Gospels, besides Jesus' birth, when he was on the receiving end of something beautiful. This is the only time in the Gospels I can remember where Jesus received something rather than gave something. And Jesus loves it. Calls it a beautiful thing. And so my encouragement to us would be, live beautiful lives, do beautiful things. The people that we love and mean something to us, show our appreciation and affection through beautiful things. For me, that's a word thing. Maybe you're not a word person. Maybe it's a gesture. I don't know what it is, but even if it's awkward or subject to ridicule, have the courage to do beautiful things for the people in our lives. And why? I think Jesus sums it up here, right? He says this line, "You will not always have me." And the reason Jesus says that is because he knows time is a limited resource. And so my question to us is, so what are you waiting for? Jesus understood well a fact that many of us don't want to acknowledge, or at least not linger on, and that's that our time with those we love and appreciate is limited. And so the question is, what are we waiting for? And what Jesus knows in this moment is that he has two nights left. If there was ever a time to do something in his honor and appreciate Jesus, now would be the time to do so. And Mary seems to intuit this. Time is limited here. Time is running out. And the reality is this, as humans, we don't know how much time we have left with one another, with the people we love. We don't know. We live so much of our lives always thinking that there's another day, another year, another 10 years, but there's never a guarantee. So when you ask yourself the question, why do beautiful things? Well, because time is a limited resource. So what are you waiting for? I mean, this played out brilliantly for me this spring, because I've been asked before, what does Kristen, you know, think of your sermon? Is she ever complimentary? She can be lovely, but she can be a harsh critic sometimes. But this sermon got her. And it wasn't a sermon I gave at Nexus. It was a sermon I gave at home, because this is what happened. Kristen's father, over COVID, you know, one of his flights got canceled. So he had this flight credit that he had to use at some point this year. And he had mentioned offhandedly to Kristen, you know, hey, it would be great if, you know, I could use this flight, maybe go with you, some of my other kids, you know, somewhere Newfoundland, out west, somewhere. And, you know, Kristen came home and she said, what do you think about that, Brad? Me traveling with my dad, maybe my siblings. I said, yeah, 100%, go for it. And so they had, you know, this initial conversation. And at the end of it, I remember I came home, like, what did you and your siblings decide to do? And I remember she's like, well, you know, it's kind of busy this spring, this summer. So what we decided to do is we're going to do it next year, 2023. We're going to make plans for 2023. And I remember in that moment, I said to Kristen, honey, it will never happen. There's always going to be excuses. I mean, notice that this is the primary objection in the story of Jesus anointing. Why this waste, they ask. I mean, these disciples, their complaint isn't absurd, right? They stand to reason. They're not wrong. The money could have used been differently. There's always an excuse, a better way to spend money. It could have helped the poor. It could have gone a long way. And this is the thing, right? Why this waste, they ask? Well, there will always be good reasons to put off and neglect the beautiful. And this is what I said to Kristen. Of course, schedules are busy. Of course, some of us might not be able to afford it, or it might be tight at the time, but there will always be excuses. There will be excuses and reasons not to do it in 2023, just like there are right now. Time is limited. And there will always be good reasons to put off doing something beautiful with your family, with your loved ones. But why wait? What are you waiting for? And so I said to her, listen, all of your siblings have kids. They all got busy schedules. This is true. And yes, the trip is going to cost some money. This is true. Maybe it makes it tight for some. This is also true. But it's also true, honey, I said, that none of you are getting any younger. And planning for next year won't make schedules easier, costs any easier. What are you waiting for? I said, it won't happen next year. Just do it now. And I got to be honest, my sermon was only getting so far. She was, yeah, you know, maybe you're right. And then finally said this, honey, would you give me just a few minutes? I want you to listen to a song. And Kristen has a nasty habit of talking through beautiful songs. And so I said, you just listen to this song. So I want to play that song for you now. I really hope YouTube doesn't take it down. I'm doing commentary on it here, YouTube. I think this song illustrates exactly what I'm talking about this morning. So I really hope this makes it past YouTube's filters. But take a listen to this song. Think and reflect on it. This is Donovan Woods' Next Year.
My brother and me used to climb this tree. We were gonna build a little clubhouse about 10 feet off the ground. We drew the whole thing up. We needed wood in our dad's truck. But he was out of work that summer. The truck only had one gear. We'll do it next year. My buddies and me, we had this dream. We were gonna rent this cabin way up in Montana. And we were gonna fish. We had the date all picked. But my old man got sick. Plan kinda disappeared. We'll do it next year. Another day down, another week gone. You're always just talking about tomorrow. Can't beg, steal, borrow, or make time. So you make plans, hope for the best. Life moves on, so damn fast. Another 12 months flies on by, you'll still here. But it's never quite next year. My little boy and me, we were out to eat. Said I can't wait till next year. And when I asked him why, he said, cause we're going camping. We're going to the ball game. And we'll do all them other things you said we'd do next year. So when is it next year? Another day down, another week gone. You're always just talking about tomorrow. Can't beg, steal, borrow, or make time. So you make plans, hope for the best. Life moves on so damn fast. Another 12 months flies on by, you're still here. But it's never quite next year. No, it's never quite next year. Fading fast. He said, I think I'd like to go see that Grand Canyon. So we just left, packed up the car and went. I called in sick to work We drove till 3 a.m. There ain't no next year. Another day down, another week gone. You're always just talking about tomorrow. You can't beg, steal, or borrow. Or make time. So you make plans, hope for the best. Life moves on so damn fast. Another 12 months flies on by. You're still here. But it's never quite next year. No, it's never quite next year. It's never quite next year. It's never quite next year.
And the song finishes, and Kristen immediately, she gets it. And, you know, my words weren't so much. It was that song was just haunting her. And she got back on the phone. She got back on the phone with the siblings. They worked. It wasn't easy, but they made it happen. It wasn't able to be a full week trip. It was a 4-day trip, but they went. And, you know, they had adventures together in the mountains. Her siblings, her father. And when she returned, I was like, how was it? She told me all these stories. And I remember asking her, I'm like, hey, that's great that you did all this hiking. What did you do in the evening? And I remember she said to me, you know, Brad, we just sat and we laughed and we told stories like only siblings and family can do. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. So what are you waiting for? Because it's never quite next year, is it, friends? And here's the thing. I know all of us, I think, have beautiful ideas and dreams within us. And some of us might be thinking right now, you know, I've always wanted to do a trip with my siblings as well. So what are you waiting for? I've always wanted to tell that person how much they mean to me. What are you waiting for? I've always wanted to write that book or that poem or create that woodworking project. I've always wanted to be an artist, do that beautiful thing, take that beautiful trip with loved ones. Whatever it is, my question this morning for you is, what are you waiting for? Because it's never quite next year. And so often, we don't really truly grasp how time is finite. And that there will always be excuses to put off and neglect the beautiful things in life. But what are we waiting for? And some of you might say, Brad, I don't have money to take a trip with the siblings, or I'm not sure I can fit that in with my schedule. I love what Jesus says of Mary here. He says this, she did what she could. So let me ask you, what can you do? You know, maybe you're thinking, I could never get my siblings together. Or, I don't really have artistic talents. I'm not good with words or making food, beautiful food. You know, to me, the interesting thing is this. It doesn't seem that Mary had much either. I mean, sure, she seemed to have one thing, this big pound of really expensive perfume oil. But we don't hear a word from her in this story. It's not like she got up and did some big speech. She didn't toast Jesus or make him a piece of art or a piece of clothing. No, rather, she took the one beautiful thing she knew she had, and she poured the one thing she knew she had, she poured it out on Jesus. And I'm convinced that all of us have something beautiful that we have to give, and that we could pour out on others as a token of our love. It could be time. Maybe you've got the gift, the beautiful thing of time. I'll tell you, as a parent, anytime somebody offers to give Kristen and I some time alone, that is a truly beautiful thing, right? Time. Maybe some of us have time. Maybe your gift, your beautiful thing is presence. Being present. Maybe it's energy. Man, I know a lot of people these days who just seem to have no energy coming out of COVID. If you have the beautiful thing of energy, what a gift that is to pour out on others, on a community, on those you love. Maybe you've got money. And I suppose that can be a really beautiful thing as well. Maybe you've got money and you can pour that out as a beautiful thing on those you love, on a community like Nexus, on things that need to be taken care of. Money can be a beautiful gift, a beautiful thing to pour out on others. Maybe you have a nice home that you can host others in. It's a beautiful thing to offer hospitality, whatever it is. Bring it. Mary did what she could, Jesus says. She brought what she could. I think the question for us is the same. What can you do and what can you bring? What can you do to make life more beautiful? What can you do to pour out the beauty of love on the ones that you love? What can you do if you're trekking with us online? What can you do to make the Nexus community more beautiful? And then finally, I like what Jesus points out about Mary's token here. He says that it was to prepare him for his burial. And I think that means that to be the recipient of an act of beauty prepares us for death. It's a curious thing to me. Think about it. Why was Jesus so moved by Mary's beautiful actions? Well, according to Jesus, it prepared him for his burial. Something about it prepared him for death, to die. And you know, I think that's true of all of us. To experience beauty, to be the recipient of beauty in this life, is to be given a small measure of comfort as we all journey towards death. Consider this. I think this is an interesting thought experiment, but consider this. Within 36 hours of this event, 36 hours after Mary anoints Jesus with all this oil, he would be hanging on a cross, about to die. And in his moments of death, I like to think that Jesus could still smell that spikenard. Could still smell it on his skin. Because you see, spikenard is a very powerful fragrance. Apparently, its scent can linger for days. And I fully realize I've sort of moved into the realm of conjecture here, but think about it. Mary pours a pound of this stuff onto Jesus' head over his body just 36 hours before he would be hanging on a cross. He would have been drenched in it, the oil filling his pores, you know, soaking up in his hair. And I can't help but wonder, as Jesus was sweating blood in the Garden of Gethsemane, as soldiers tortured him, as he hung on the cross, I wonder, could Jesus still catch the faint smell of spikenard still on him? I don't know. As I've thought about this week, I like to think he could. And with that smell, I can't help but imagine that it offered him in his moment of death, his worst moment, it offered him just the smallest measure of comfort. That while he was dying, he could still smell the fragrance of love, the aroma of a beautiful gesture. We all must travel the road to death. And as we do, we can pour out our love in beautiful ways on others. And to be the recipient of that ourselves is one of the most amazing things in the world. As we travel our own paths towards death, may the faint scent of love and beauty we have received in this life be there to prepare us and comfort us when our moment comes. Friends, that's all I have for us this morning. Wanted to leave you with that. The last time I'll do this on video, I think at least. But I hope that in some way this will stay with you this summer. It might even impact the way you approach the summer. When you're with your family, your friends, do something beautiful. Speak beautiful words, some beautiful gesture, because time is limited and there will always be excuses and reasons why we should put it off. But acts of beauty are never wasted in God's economy. May you remember that this summer, And so for a final time here through the video podcast, may I remind you this week, this summer, go in peace.